I'm running for mayor of Toronto as the people's mayor. Like City. Like City is a key component in integrated overall 10-year direction of hope in Toronto. Vision 2020, Another Toronto is Possible, is broadly defined under three different themes: mobility, sustainability, identity. The Vision 2020 theme of mobility begins with Bike City. The complete mobility theme will be expanded upon and shared later in mid-September. For today, though, we're just going to be talking about Bike City. During the previous two critical mass bike rides, which happened on the last Friday of the month in cities all around the world, here in Toronto, we've had them on July 30th and August 27th. During those two rides, I shared some of the ideas that will be presented here this morning. That was the informal presentation. This morning will be the formal presentation of Bike City. It's not safe to ride a bike in Toronto. To alleviate that, the first thing we need to do is to understand where we are right now. I propose and will hold two Mayor's Bike Summits, one in the spring and one in the fall. The one in the spring will be to see what we need to do. The one in the fall will confirm how well we did or did not do. It will not be held in downtown. The Mayor's Bike Summit will be held at the Scarborough Civic Center to remind everyone that cycling is an issue that is citywide, not just here in the downtown core, as some of my opponents have been incorrectly saying. What do you call a bike lane in Scarborough or North York? The sidewalk. And that needs to be changed. I propose 2012, the year the Mayans said everything is going to end, in Toronto, as the year of cycling. I'm holding in my hand a bicycle on my keychain. It's on my keychain because I believe the bicycle is the true key to the city. In Toronto, the year 2012, this will be the key to the city. I got this key from the equivalent of the Yvonne Bambrick in Curitiba, Brazil, when I was there earlier this year. They don't have a bike network. They don't have bike lanes. They have a wonderful transportation system, sustainability, the poverty alleviation, the lowest number of gangs. But one thing they forgot to do was to install bicycle infrastructure. They're working damn hard to correct that. It's in the DNA level of the city. We are far ahead in the game. We actually have an understanding and have some bicycle infrastructure. The year 2012 will be the year of cycling in the city. Not as an ending going, look how well we did, but rather as a beginning of a 10-year plan, and hopefully we will see 10 years of infrastructure, not just for cycling, but 10 years of infrastructure of all sorts that we need across the city. What do I think should be done with the existing Toronto bike plan? The bike plan that we have has become the orphan, distant cousin housed in a family home we all call Toronto. It doesn't work. It's failed. So I'm not going to go and revisit it. Bike City is the balm on the wound that every cyclist feels when they refer to those three words, Toronto Bike Plan. Toronto Bike Plan is dead. Bike City is about to be born. The amount of dollars that we need for cycling infrastructure is essentially a rounding error on a $9.2 billion and growing operating budget. It gives the most bang for the buck. The greatest number of people will benefit directly from cycling infrastructure. Less expressways, more bike highways. It costs less, it benefits more, it reduces greenhouse gases, and I will get to specifics later on. But for example, when it comes to money, The St. Clair right-of-way cost $106 million. It took 6 years to complete. Numerous local business owners and people are still financially hurt by its deconstruction, reconstruction process. Roncesvalles, the Bloor Street revitalizations are both unknown in total dollars and the eventual delay when it will finally end. Once the decision was made for Jarvis Street, it only took $65,000 and 3 weeks for Transportation Services to paint and install the Jarvis Street bike lanes. Jarvis needs the bike lanes to end at Bloor Street, not at Ted Rogers Way, and it needs to be completed all the way to the waterfront and end not abruptly as it does right now at Queen Street. It's not true that we went from 5 lanes down to 4, and the bike lanes took away an extra lane of traffic. That is a blatant lie by some of my opponents. The plan was always to reduce 5 lanes to 4, to remove the reversible lane, and not install bike lanes. It was due to community pressure, mutual understanding, open houses, that the temporary painted bike lanes have now been installed on Jarvis Street, and by all accounts, by every conversation, it is a success and they will not be removed. I want separated barrier right-of-way bike lanes that are solar powered with LED lights that are activated by motion sensors when cyclists approach that stretch of the bike lane. I've confirmed this with the master electrician. The feasibility of this, it's not science fiction. That master electrician is actually with us this morning. The Toronto Cycling Committee and the Toronto Pedestrian Committee have called for the creation of a senior trails and pathway planner position, a trail master within the Parks Division. We need a trail master who is in charge of the forgotten part of the bike plan that has failed us. The bike paths in ravines, parks, trails, wherever streets are not involved, the trail master must have at least a dozen staff and the correct budget to give these trails the tender loving care that today is lacking. How much tender loving care, how much TLC is the question. Several years ago, it was estimated that bike trails in our parks had a $20 million backlog of state of good repair maintenance. That's a quarter of the entire Parks Division state of good repair budget. We need to prioritize $20 million as it is the best investment of tax dollars in favor of bike trails and the related upkeep. For less than the investment cost of the entire St. Clair streetcar right-of-way, we can have the complete bike city with desired routes connecting people, not just in a few choice privileged areas of the city, but the entire city. Why haven't the 13 priority neighborhoods been prioritized for bike highways? If Transit City is good enough an argument there, Bike City must be a slam dunk. We need east-west bikeways. The Tooker for one, along the Bloor-Danforth corridor. Shepherd Avenue for another. Eglinton Avenue from the airport to Scarborough East for yet another. We need to reinvent what we mean when we say bike network. It must be a part of an integrated understanding of what the word mobility means in this city. Bike city means freedom of choice in mobility across Toronto. The question comes up, how do we encourage people to bicycle in Toronto? Do we support Bixi or generally bicycle tourism? In dedicating 2012, Toronto's Year of Cycling, we'll find that answer out. We ain't perfect. In fact, we're in the Stone Age when it comes to a progressive vision of cycling in Toronto. Let's go with what we got. Bring attention without apology in our shortcomings over the past decade. to start, we must decriminalize the monthly critical mass group bike rides. It should be fun. When they say the battle cry, we're not blocking traffic, we are traffic, they're exactly correct. In the Highway Traffic Act, to use that mumbo-jumbo language from Queen's Park, a bicycle is a vehicle. Almost every month, regardless of which city I am in, I will find myself a bike and join that month's critical mass bike ride. I've done it in San Francisco, Vancouver, Ottawa, Toronto, of course, and elsewhere. It's a hell of a time. It's fun. It shouldn't be a hassle with police escort waiting to give us tickets and spoil that fun. If we do not have young people, and by that I mean 12, 13, 14-year-olds coming to critical mass and enjoying that, we are missing out on an educating by example and by fun an entire generation of people who are concerned about sustainability, mobility, and cycling in Toronto. We must create a car-free route each Sunday for bikes, pedestrians, families, children and strollers, inline skaters. It may be along the waterfront, it might be elsewhere, but we must have this one day each week to enjoy a car-free, family-friendly ribbon through Toronto. Ottawa has it, I lived there, and it was wonderful alongside the Rideau Canal. Rio de Janeiro has car-free Sundays. In March of this year, 2010, I was there for the World Urban Forum. I rented a bike for less than $10 Canadian and enjoyed Copacabana Beach on two wheels. Why not Toronto? Well, first, we don't have a Copacabana Beach, but that's for another day. At the Gladstone, I was actually the first. Some are arguing I was actually the second. So I was among the first actual Bixie riders to take bike number one out for a spin. I support Bixie, but as it is now, it is designed to fail. Bixie needs a minimum of 5,000 bikes to start and a much wider footprint within our city to kickstart. Temporary Bixie docking stations must become part of Nuit Blanche, Afrofest, festival heavy days in Toronto during the summer, and actually the winter now. Our city is evolving arts-wise. At times, we do have up to 10 different events happening in Toronto on the same weekend. Let's put temporary, day-long Bixie docks at each of those events. This will allow people the freedom to choose their own point-to-point, festival-to-festival scheduling. Imagine doing the same this September for the Toronto International Film Festival. At all the restaurants, at all the venues, at all the paparazzi spots, including where the films are being played. Bixie will be a key choice of mobility for guests during the Pan Am Games in 2015. But it won't happen there without a laser beam focus on the steps to get Bixie where it needs to be. Vision 2020, another Toronto is possible, mobility. Free bike rentals for visiting convention delegates. The background on this, Toronto is a leading destination of choice for many North American conventions. Outside of scheduled meetings and convention hours, delegates become tourists, exploring our city, investing time and money in local businesses, restaurants, attractions, and events. The vision of this, include, encourage, or provide the Bixie Toronto or an equivalent free bike rental for convention delegates during their stay. The conclusion of that will be a number of cities already provide week-long free transit pass for convention delegates. Why can't Toronto include bikes within that transit pass? It makes our convention marketing much more competitive. It may even give us a leg up. In providing the free bike rentals, Toronto provides an added value for hosting conventions here. It also gradually introduces
our cycling infrastructure to a worldwide audience. It's good for tourism, it's good for business, it's good for people who live here too. How does this integrate? It's environmentally friendly. It's healthy. Visitors to Toronto will be introduced to the city in a unique way, on their own. It complements other choices of getting around the city. Plus, with peak time congestion and transit delays, cycling for some convention delegates may actually be the better way. Transformation. Free bike rentals bring in new, unexpected bases of sponsors to Toronto's Bixi Taxi Bike Rental Program. Namely, host hotels or convention organizers. This income stream indirectly benefits local bike renters. It improves the perception and understanding of cycling by both Torontonians and tourist delegates who will return worldwide to a worldwide audience, bragging that, wow, Toronto's bike city works. Regeneration. This helped Toronto along the way in becoming a cycling city, not just for residents, for our guests as well. It confirms Toronto is a bikeable city. It helps prioritize cycling infrastructure around convention facilities, such as convention halls, hotels, and elsewhere. I spent a lot of time talking about Bixi because there is a question that it may fail. There are not enough subscriptions, and I will get to that in a moment. What role does cycling play in people's lives? What should it play in the lives of this, in the life of this city? Bike, foot, transit, city. Taxi. Bike, foot, transit, taxi. In that order is how I prioritize how I choose to move about this city. Other people have different priorities and different combinations of those four choices. The bicycle for me is what shoes are to most people. They are my feet. Most early mornings, I may bike to the bottom of the Baldwin Steps below Casa Loma to do my morning run up and down the steps. I could TTC it to DuPont, walk north to two short blocks, but what's the fun in that? The pleasant downhill, the return bike ride from the Baldwin Steps is always a reward for my morning workout. Other mornings, I randomly decide to bike out to enjoy a sunshine and a lifetime's worth of inventory at the best Toronto spots in which to do so. A car could only take you so far, and the time to take it takes to walk to a number of these locations would mean I'd miss the sunshine. Biking's the way to go in the early morning. It needs to become safer, not just for me, but for commuters and everyone else, including the drivers. If we don't have the dedicated bike lanes, or painted bike lanes, or alternate cycle and bike safety routes, this is a problem, and it's a permanent problem. We need to fix that. Transit is another question for another day. Sometimes when I can't sleep at night, I pick up my bike. A quick bike ride is also the secret best cure for insomnia. If you can't sleep in the heat, pick up your bike, go for a ride, there's a lot less traffic. That's also part of Bike City. It's where you feel safe 24 hours a day that you can ride your cycle, your bike, anywhere in Toronto. So it's not simply bike lanes. It's not simply getting a flat tire fixed because now there's more bike shops and cycling infrastructure. It's an attitude that I can ride my bike anywhere, anytime in our city. As a child, there were no painted bike lanes, and cycling infrastructure was a parking meter on a sidewalk you might lock your bike to. I used to feel unsafe locking my bike. I used to feel unsafe riding on the streets. Today, at least in my one of my childhood neighborhoods, which is here we are today on Harvard, there are bike lanes. It's often said some qualities skip a generation. So between my maternal grandfather and me, he used to ride his bike everywhere, and even into his late 70s and 80s. And I'm half that age, and I'm riding my bike. Cycling is in my DNA. Cycling is in the DNA of a lot of Torontonians, but cycling is not in the DNA of the city of Toronto. We need to correct this fundamental design error. That's where cycling needs to evolve in the life of the city, the DNA. Like electricity or water, it should eventually just become something ubiquitous, invisible, obvious, and taken for granted. Bikes, cycling, and cyclists need to be woven in Toronto's DNA. One of my high schools was Jarvis Collegiate. From grades 10 to 12, Jarvis Street was often a highway to me beside the sidewalk. Rush hour coincided with the start and end times of the school day. When they opened officially the temporary Jarvis bike lanes, CTV was there and they filmed me as the first official cyclist to use the Jarvis bike lanes. The paint was barely dry. The orange pylons were on the then only completed bike lane section north of Wellesley. The Jarvis Street renewed itself as a safe, shared public space for car, cyclists, and pedestrians. I felt safe riding my bike on Jarvis Street. Finally, I have been doored once, and if you don't know what doored means, I'm not going to explain it. That's what Google is for. Ironically, I was doored near the steps of the Mary Pickford Memorial plaque on University Avenue. I often feel unsafe riding my bike, especially when road construction happens on regularly biked routes, bike lanes or not. Today, there's actual construction on the Harvard Street bike lane on the north side of the street. So here we are, a cyclist just actually has rode on what is being de and reconstructed. The consideration for cyclists seems to always be as an afterthought in safe rerouting of traffic around construction zones. This is a question on lack of integration, but on streets with painted bike lanes, it's a different story. Depending on which street, the comfort level varies. Lansdowne with its sheros sucks. It's my least favorite. I did one semester at West Toronto Secondary School, which is on Lansdowne, and again, it today yet remains unsafe and uncomfortable for cyclists to use. Lansdowne Avenue sucks. The nearby parallel West Toronto bike path is a parallel universe and is not quite an alternative for short hops along Lansdowne. Harvard Street, near my home, all the way to Queen's Park, is my favorite route of choice. It may not look like it today, but it is. I go out of my way to use Harvard. I would much rather it be Bloor. A few weeks ago, I witnessed a dad and his little daughter, maybe 5 or 6 years old, on a very early weekend morning, right here along the Harvard bike lane. He was teaching her how to be safe on the road, how to trust herself in riding her bicycle. I stayed well enough behind, but within earshot of hearing his encouragement and how well she was doing. Words fail me right now in expressing how happy I was to see this unexpected moment. As a child in this same neighborhood, it was hard for me to feel safe on these same main streets. Safety is the number one answer given to me when I ask people and voters why they don't ride their bike or why they don't ride their bike more. Safety. The Martin Goodman Trail. I like it. I enjoy it. But the damn lines haven't been painted in like forever. Well, at least not since that first striping at the trail's inception. As mayor, I'd get the blue and green lines refreshed almost immediately and cared for after that. The trail snakes along our waterfront. What we have built must be maintained. I'm not about ripping it up and putting it along the water and moving all kinds of buildings around just to get another 10-second view of the lake for condos. Where the trail works well, Butterfly Park in the Humber at the south, on the south end of Etobicoke, is wonderful. Contrast that with perhaps along where the Boulevard Club is by Sunnyside Pool. We don't need to rip up the bike path, put it along the lake, and have all the goose crap going all over it. When you reach Etobicoke on the Martin Goodman Trail, it's a wonderful reward for riding that path. We need many more wonderful rewards at the end of our paths. Shepherd and Ellesmere and Scarborough, around the Scarborough Town Center, and east to Markham Road, is another of my routes. The amount of road space on roads such as those for dedicated, low-barrier separated bike lanes is reasonable and plenty. It would be safer for both drivers and cyclists. Again, what do we call a bike lane in Scarborough? The sidewalk. And that's exactly the point. It's not safe to ride one's bike on Scarborough's main streets, which is where the desired bike routes are today. Many streets in amalgamated Toronto present this opportunity. Not just in the downtown, Scarborough, North York, and the Etobicoke, because I like to remind everyone there's North and South Etobicoke. Council recently decided to nix a pilot project for a separated bike lane on University Avenue. Do I think the City of Toronto should have physically separated Montreal-style on-street bike lanes? Yes. It's a simple answer. I was actually inside council chambers at the late hour of 9:40 p.m. on the evening Councillor Fletcher from Toronto Danforth claims to have voted incorrectly on the University Avenue summer trial of separated bike lanes. I was stunned as the councillor tried to explain her actions and was re-pissed off. I was re-pissed off as the deputy speaker would not allow a re-vote, despite the fact of re-votes being taken by the speaker of council on separate matters earlier on the same day. As the bike mayor, I must bring the University Avenue bike lanes back. In the interim, similar to what has been done on Jarvis Street, we can forego the center boulevard separated bike lanes down the middle of University Avenue and create the more familiar curbside painted bike lanes. The mayor's office can direct staff to install painted bike lanes. End of non-discussion. Painted bike lanes need not be voted on by council. And even if it did, so what? It's the right thing to do, the right thing to vote for. Yes, some parking spots up and down University Avenue may have to go. The cab stands can be adjusted for regardless. Again, so what? The lanes of vehicle traffic will remain exactly the same as they are now. We're removing parking, not removing a lane of traffic. Hence, that item list in the war on car argument becomes moot. It's not a war on driving, it's a war on a few parking spots. There is enough car parking within walking distance of hospitals along Hospital Row. And I do have a different, unique parking solution, but I'll get to that in mobility at another time. I like biking down University Avenue, but I'm always an extra notch above careful when doing so. As the bike mayor, I would name the University Avenue bike lanes, separated or not, the Pickford, after Mary Pickford. Her house was on University Avenue. She was a cyclist. And it's in her honor to name that bike lane the Pickford. Now back to Montreal. Montreal's bike lanes are separated. Many people in the city have visited Montreal, come back, and they ask, why not here? Well, those answers that have been being, I don't know where they're coming from, But here are some of the answers to those crazy questions. Montreal does have colder, snowier, messier winters than Toronto, yet they are mad busy in building separated, dedicated bike lanes. We in Toronto, with easier winters, have no excuse. Why not us? I attended the World Urban Forum in Rio de Janeiro in March, and I saw dedicated, separated bike lanes there. We need them on as many roads as possible. They need to be cleared of snow and debris. The potholes, from the perspective of the cyclists, need to be fixed. They need to be integrated with the entire streetscape. But, is what echoes all the time when defending the inevitability of separated bike lanes across Toronto. But we can't because, blah, 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 blah. Take me to any street in this city, any street in Toronto, and I will feng shui, and if you don't know what that is, that's again what Google is for. I will feng shui all the street furniture, the width of the sidewalk, the small shop owner's business interest, the utility pole, the tree planters, which die after a few years anyway, and confirm separated bike lanes are possible and perhaps imperative on that length of the block. I actually enjoy confusing the skeptics and winning over voters one by one by one, as this question has been coming up while canvassing for the mayor's job on the street. It is not a question of separated bike lanes. It is a question of safety for people who ride bikes and peace of mind for people who drive vehicles who sometimes kill or maim people who ride bikes. Nothing less. Torontonians are concerned about congestion, lengthening commute times, and the impact of the automobile on our air. Do I feel there are too many cars in Toronto? Too few? Just the right amount? I feel we need to focus on reducing the per capita miles driven. Reducing, overall, the time spent in the car is the goal. I want to create spare the air days. On days when there is smog or a health alert, we must find a way to allow free morning transit. I asked Mayor Miller about this possibility for Toronto, and he began his answer with, "We can't because." I disagree. It is possible, and that's one goal we must reach. The San Francisco Bay Area does this, and I have experienced it while visiting my grandparents in the East Bay across from San Francisco. BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, their version of our GO Transit, is free on smog days. BART actively invites cyclists to ride their trains with their bikes. We must create the welcoming, encouraging situation where drivers willingly forego their cars and choose to bike, walk, or ride pool their way into today's congested areas. There will always be too many cars. An electric car will not ease congestion. It will still be a car. The first best option is to always reward people who live as close as possible to their work or business. Who needs a car when you can walk across the street? It is the mayor's job to create the situation where people begin reducing their annual number of hours spent inside a car voluntarily. Now, how can transit work more effectively with cyclists? We need to evolve our understanding of transit, biking, driving, to one of mobility. Urban mobility is the universal overlapping sweet spot in understanding how transit can be better integrated with cyclists. Here is simply a list of must-dos that must be done. Better maps within the TTC subway stations and GO Transit stations. Maps must show bike parking, nearby bike lanes, and bike trails, be they in parks, ravines, and so forth. most maps of Toronto show the TTC subway stations. It's time bikes became a priority on Toronto's maps. Choosing the rearmost subway car in the standard chain of six subway cars or four subway cars on the Shepherd line to be dedicated for bikes and being bike friendly. Why? Because every subway rider will be aware that the rearmost subway car is for bikes. People will expect bikes on the subway. They'll expect them on the platforms and know that if they don't want to be around bikes, they can choose to ride in any of the other five subway cars. It also removes uncertainty for cyclists. They know they are welcome to bring their bikes onto a specific subway train car. That yellow bumpy warning stripe at the edge of subway platforms, it can be labeled with a giant circle with a bike icon in the middle of it. Four of these giant stickers can be on the ground platform floor where the doors to the rearmost subway car open. We need to put small bike wheel width rail tracks up and down the stairs of all subway stations. This will allow cyclists to roll their bikes from up and down from ground level to the subway platform level easier. It's also safer for pedestrians walking up and down the TTC station stairways because cyclists no longer will be carrying the bikes on their shoulders, taking up the entire stairwell. We need big seat docking stations at as many TTC subway stations and key surface route intersections as possible. People will Bixi to one subway station, ride the rocket, exit the TTC system at a point of their choosing, and then pick up a new Bixi bike and be on their way. We need more secure bike parking around the TTC stations. Each new dedicated transit lane for surface routes must include the question of how biking and cyclists will be integrated. Why isn't the York University Express busway integrated for cyclists to also use between Downsview Station and York University? Let's fix that, and then include that learning in every other dedicated surface route. The completion of the West Toronto rail path must be included in any Union Station to airport transit proposal. Not doing so is an insult to the West Toronto rail path, the riders, as it is now incomplete and begging to be completed all the way to Union Station. There's a lot more on the list which I'll get to. Hopefully so far you have an impression of the direction and an understanding of mobility that I believe the mayor's office must inspire and make happen. This weekend is a difficult weekend in the messenger community, in the bike courier community in Toronto. So I will address that specifically. Bicycle safety was part of the discussion when Darcy Allen Shepherd had an altercation with the former Attorney General. I won't speak directly to how I feel about it, but I will address some inspiration to the cycling, the bike couriers. There cannot be a one-size-fits-all answer for improving bike courier safety. I'll ask some questions. Where are the mail rooms of the clients in those office towers? Sometimes they're on different floors. Sometimes they're deep inside the bowel of a building. Which floor is the mailroom on? What is the security procedure for entry to the mailroom? How slow or how busy is reception in various of the offices? We need to evolve the cycling courier infrastructure as the root of the solution in easing congestion from the viewpoint of small package delivery. Here is what we must do. There's not enough bike ring parking, or there's not enough bike rings, nor even bike parking to go around in the financial district. Yet hypocritically, the office tower owners don't want bike rings and so forth uglying up their manicured pavements on King and Bay and Wellington and Adelaide. Without the services of bike courier delivery, much business within those same office towers would be directly affected negatively. We need bike courier only bike parking near as many office towers as possible, similar to existing taxi stands around those same locations. We need to integrate the needs of bike courier delivery into every installation of dedicated bike lanes in the downtown core. It has been looked at from this perspective before, but not to any serious level of consideration. Toronto needs dedicated, separated by cement barrier bike lanes, which are safe enough for bike couriers with trailers to navigate in and around and within the financial district and the downtown core. To truly begin to address the question of how congestion can be eased by bike courier package delivery, we need to reinvent the question to get a better answer. UPS asks, "What has Brown done for you lately?" The city can work off that marketing approach. What has bike done for you lately? Imagine bike and foot couriers taking not just small packages, but packages that are small to medium size without getting so big that they are denied carriage onto regular office tower elevators and are directed, nor they are no longer to be directed to the service elevators or even the conveyors. Imagine the delivery contents of an average UPS truck being broken into 5 to 10 bundles, if not more. Each bundle can fit into an elongated bike trailer. The bike trailer courier cyclist would pick up bundles 2, perhaps 3 times in the day from a central pickup point. It could be a co-op model between courier companies who opt in voluntarily for a central package sorting location. It's cost effective. She or he would meet up at a designated bike courier parking delivery spot, perhaps at the base of an office tower. From there, couriers on foot would pick up small and medium-sized packages from those bundles and the bike trailer for delivery into the same towers they are now in front of. Rinse, wash, repeat until all is delivered. The bike courier bike trailers would, of course, greatly benefit from dedicated bike lanes throughout the downtown core. Would this ease congestion? The answer can be as simple as, hell yes. I'm returning to the question of Bixie because it is foremost on the minds of people in this election. Public bike sharing system in Toronto, it benefits our city and the users who pay for it. At the moment, Toronto is playing it safe. They're only investing in 1,000 bicycles at just 80 locations. We have 2.5 million people in this city. During the first 3 months of operation, Montreal's bike system accumulated over 8,400 members and over 77,000 rides. That's 77,000 users, all of whom paid into their version of Bixie. In Montreal, over 3.6 million kilometers were traveled on Bixie bikes in just those 3 months, which eliminated 900,000 kilograms of greenhouse gases. In Montreal, a city of 1.6 million people, they launched with 3,000 bicycles at 300 locations and later increased its fleet to 5,000 bikes at 400 stations. Bixi launched in London, England, with more than 6,000 bikes and 400 stations for its first phase. Now, they are at more than triple that number. Paris, not commonly known as the most bike-friendly city, with a population of about 2.1 million people, the city center of Paris, France, has 20,000 bicycles available at 1,639 stations. It's called Vélib. I didn't pronounce that properly, but I'm not French. New York City ain't far behind. Toronto, at 1,000 bikes and 80 docking stations, is far behind. Gary Welsh, Toronto's Transportation Services Manager.